Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to a full-length episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live. Y'all know I love campus novels and novels about female friendship, so I absolutely loved sinking into Beyond the Point this summer. I flew through its 500 pages, which is actually pretty difficult for me. I tend to really feel a book's length, and this one, I did not feel like it was 500 pages long, even though it was, and that's a really good thing for me. And I was completely invested in the three West Point Military Academy women at the heart of this story. So I'm thrilled to have Claire Gibson, author of Beyond the Point, joining me today. Claire grew up moving often as an Army brat and actually lived on the West Point Academy campus while her dad was a professor there. Her work has been featured in The Washington Post, The Christian Science Monitor, and Entrepreneur Magazine, among many other publications. And Beyond the Point is her debut novel. Welcome, Claire.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you. And one of the other cool things when I was reading this novel is I could actually picture Camp Bruckner because I did a couple triathlons there.
Oh my gosh. That must have been really hard.
I swam in that lake.
Oh no. That lake is pretty nasty.
There are lots of plants growing in it that you get tangled up in when you're racing.
That's a hilly course too.
Yeah, it is. It's hilly and it was the middle of August and it was so, so, so hot.
Yeah, Camp Bruckner is beautiful. It's like one of the central scenes from Beyond the Point, especially when the women in the book are actually starting to become friends rather than enemies. And it was fun to put them in that scenario and watch what happens. It's pretty amazing to think about it. Like most kids that go to college, you don't get to go play with your friends in the woods. You know what I mean?
And so no.
For cadets at West Point, they get a lot of play time together, which builds a lot of bonds.
It actually felt to me like a college version of summer camp, but also with these kind of hellish physical challenges put in there.
Definitely. Oh, it's that. Yeah. And everyone always sarcastically says, oh, it's the best summer of your life, which everyone always rolls their eyes about because it's not the best summer of your life, but it is when you look back on it.
Absolutely. So for those listeners who have not read Beyond the Point yet, can you give us a quick summary about what it's about, but without spoilers?
Sure. Well, it's based on true stories. I did a lot of research interviewing women that attended the academy from the years 2001 to 2010. And I tell people it's a lot like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants meets Zero Dark Thirty, if you've seen that movie. And so it's a friendship novel that follows these three characters, Danny, Avery, and Hannah, as they embark at the U.S. Military Academy and then in their lives after. And they started the academy in 2000. And so 9/11 happens when they're sophomores in college, which drastically changes the trajectory of their lives. All three of them, after they graduate, have to go to war. Some are, get married, and one of the characters actually is not commissioned into the Army. So she sort of takes a more traditional path where she has to get a normal job after college. And so these three women have to figure out, how do we remain friends when our lives are starting to look so different into our early 20s?
And can you tell us a bit about what it was like growing up on the West Point campus while your dad was a professor there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was actually just there this past weekend, so I have a lot of fresh memories. But it's a crazy place to be a kid. You know, West Point is a very secure campus. You can't even really get on campus unless you've had a background check. And so for kids that are 10, 11, 12 years old, like I was, living within the gates, it's a pretty secure community. And you could just walk around and you've got these beautiful granite buildings that look like Hogwarts. And you've got these athletic, talented young men and women that are 18 to 21, marching around in uniform and jumping out of planes and doing military training. And so it's a really exciting and dynamic place to be. There's tons of patriotic events and marches and concerts, and every weekend some country music artist was there to like support the troops. And so it was
There
was always really interesting stuff going on. I remember when I was a kid, I stood outside of the performance hall at West Point for, golly, it had to have been 6 hours, because Tim McGraw's truck was parked inside waiting because they were doing a performance that evening. And I just knew he was going to walk outside and I was going to get an autograph. And of course, he never came out. But yeah, it was just such a great place to be a kid. And I was really lucky to be influenced by the cadets there. Many of them are leaders and natural volunteers, and so they would volunteer with different organizations in the community. So I was really lucky to have them influence my life and pour into my life.
Going back to something you said earlier about the security, I never thought about that until you said it, but did you have play dates? Were friends allowed to come to your house? How did that work?
Oh, yeah. I say it's really secure. You didn't used to have a background check to get onto West Point, but 9/11 obviously really changed how the security landscape looked.
Sure.
Yes, you could have play dates and that kind of thing. It just was a little bit of a process.
Got it. Well, it sounds like a very cool place to grow up and so different. And I didn't expect to hear country music perks either. So that's awesome. You had mentioned earlier that you interviewed actual female West Point cadets and graduates as research for this book. So it stemmed originally four female West Point graduates asked you to interview them for a possible story, correct?
That is kind of how it started. Yep.
And then this mushroomed.
It did. It got way out of control. I interviewed these four women right at the beginning, thinking that I would write a magazine article. That's what I was doing in 2013. I was doing a lot of magazine and newspaper work, and they saw that writing. They had known me and my family when we lived at West Point. And so one of the women in particular reached out and said, "Hey, I've seen some of your writing. You really should interview me and my friends. We have crazy stories." I mean, one of them went on to work for Obama. One worked for General Petraeus before his fall from grace.
Right.
And so they just had these incredible stories. And the more I interviewed them, you know, that once I completed those first four interviews over the phone, I had always wanted to write a book. And it was very clear to me that there was enough fodder here for something really special. And so I asked the four of them, "Hey, would you be interested or willing to let me use your story as inspiration?" And of course, they were all really excited about that. And then they introduced me to another ring of friendship. So then it started to balloon. And I ended up interviewing maybe 20 to 25 women across different graduating years. It was really fascinating. I mean, some of the stories didn't even make it into the book that were so compelling. But like you said, it was 500 pages, so there wasn't more I could squeeze in.
What's a good story that didn't make it into the book?
Oh my gosh. I always tell this story. There was this one woman, her name is Charlsie, and Charlsie was a really good friend of mine. She's so cute and bubbly and blonde, and she came from a really, you know, interesting background. Some of her interviews are in the back of the book, but she did tell me this one story about being in Iraq, and her job was to help the general in her unit do everything that he needed to do while they were deployed. And at one point, the general decides he wants to host a party for his soldiers to help boost morale. And so for about 2 weeks, Charlsie was in charge of the party planning committee. And she, part of her job in Iraq was to get a bunch of camels, because the general was convinced that they needed to have camel rides for all the soldiers. And so she's in the middle of a war zone, figuring out how to feed and house camels in an air hangar just to keep them alive before the party was going to take place. So her experience of a deployment and just some of the stories she told me were hilarious, of just trying to be a zookeeper in the middle of a war zone.
And that's not what people think deployment is like. So hearing that just kind of broadens your perspective of what going over there is like.
And some of the stories did end up in the book in some regard, but there's just a lot that happens overseas to sustain American forces that requires just so much manpower. And there were parts of me when I listened to their stories where I thought, man, how much money did our country waste getting camels into an air hangar? But
yeah,
then the other half of me is like, well, I mean, those 18-year-old boys, they're out there fighting every day. And, you know, good for them. They got to get a picture on a camel and change their Facebook post.
They need some sort of mental release.
Yeah, but it's hard. I mean, I never wanted the book to be political at all.
Sure. And it's not. I do not feel like it's political at all.
But it was hard not to hear the stories and then try to make judgments over those things.
I know that Dani, Hannah, and Avery ended up being sort of composites of all of these women that you interviewed. But did you also put any of yourself in them? And is there one you identify with more than the others personally?
Well, I think for me, you know, my personality type probably lines up most closely with Hannah's in the book.
Gotcha.
I'm definitely a rule follower, more so when I was younger than I am now.
And that makes sense growing up in an army family.
Uh-huh. Definitely. The rules were clear and I knew that I could win if I followed them.
And you were expected to follow them, right?
Right. Totally. So, you know, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I'm all about achievement and getting other people's approval. And so Hannah, like I really just wanted to do as much as I could to succeed and make sure everyone knew that I was succeeding, which was probably super exhausting for my friends and people around me. But like Hannah, the best laid plans, right? So I learned a lot of times in my life, but definitely into adulthood, that you can follow all the rules you want and life still hands you circumstances that you weren't predicting. And so watching her story arc in a lot of ways when I was writing this book, I was living my own Hannah journey, if you will, without having giving too many spoilers. But I had to deal with a lot of grief in my life and a lot of grappling with why do I behave the way I behave? And because I really believe this, or is it because I think I'm going to get something out of this? I learned a lot through the writing process. But I also have parts of my character that are Dani's character and Avery. Dani in the book is so confident. And there on days where I wear red lipstick or something, I feel like I can be a Dani and I can like go into a boardroom and have a good conversation. But her character operates on that level way more often than I do. And then Avery's character can be, you know, she says it like it is. She holds no punches. She acts sometimes impulsively, but that's because she's very passionate. And there definitely are parts of me that are that way. So it was easy to put myself in their shoes. I miss writing for them sometimes. It's hard to change gears now because I liked those characters so much.
And I think for the reader, their personalities are so different that you're bound to identify with some part of one of these women as a reader.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. So one of my favorite parts of the book was your prologue. And I think it was extremely powerful. It really hit you in the face as a reader. In this prologue, you decided to more or less reveal the crux of your ending right off the bat. And I actually love books that do this. I call them how they got there books. The story is not what happens, but how did you get from point A to point Z? And so how did you decide to do that?
You know, it's interesting. The emails are the part that you're talking about. And I didn't move those emails up to the front of the book for the prologue until pretty late in the manuscript drafting process. In fact, I'd already signed with my agent. We were about to send the book out to publishers. And I sent her a final draft and I said, hey, what do you think of this? And I stuck those emails up at the front and she was like, oh my gosh, it's genius. And I'm like, it's not genius. Part of the reason that I was so hesitant to do it was that I felt like it was a little bit cheating.
Why do you think that's cheating?
It's not, but I felt
No, I don't think it is. I'm just curious why you would think that might be.
That was my hesitation because it felt a little bit the way a thriller book sort of shows you the dead body. And then, like you said, the whole rest of the book is how you get there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But for me, I ended up deciding to go with it because it's a way to kind of introduce the cast of characters before you really know who they all are. And it left a bit of mystery because even though a lot of people read those emails and they decide what they think the ending is, a lot of them realize, oh, it's not what I thought, or it's different than I thought.
It was slightly different than what I had thought. I know that something happens. I don't know exactly what it is.
And you know from the beginning there's a death. And so when these women go off to deployment, I think it adds a whole level of intensity because you're like, well, who's going to die, when, where, how? It kind of adds this level of imminent danger, which is real. Like that was real. It could have been any of them. And so I think in the end, I'm glad I went with my gut because a lot of people have talked about the emails and have said, oh, at the end, I go back and I read them again. And when you read them again, you know all the characters now. You know who's emailing who. And it just makes more sense on the second read. And so I'm glad that I did it, but it took me a while to decide to use that device.
Well, I loved it. And I definitely did go back and read the emails again after I finished the book. And I agree, they weren't quite clear from the get-go what happened. And once you know everything and go back and read them, they're even more powerful.
Because you know everyone. And so you're
invested.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm glad that worked for you. I mean, that means a lot to hear.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, I love that when authors do that. And so one of my favorite parts of Beyond the Point that really has not been talked about a lot is the fact that you made Danny, Avery, and Hannah all elite athletes. How did you decide to do that?
So there's kind of two reasons. One is that many of the women that I interviewed were elite athletes. And it kind of makes sense because West Point attracts a very physically active student body. And even if you're not in a Division I sport, you are required to participate in athletics in some way, shape, or form. So whether that's an intramural team or a club sport, everyone is participating in athletics in some way. And so the other reason that I made the decision for them to be athletes is that everyone that I interviewed explained that there really is two different experiences at West Point. There is the student athlete experience for a Division I athlete, and there's the, you know, quote unquote, regular experience of a female that's just in the Corps of the Cadets and doesn't have her sports team. And so the fact that these three girls have team mentality helps give them reasons to be together. They have different rules, so they're allowed to actually eat at the same table for their meals, whereas other women are forced to eat with their assigned company.
Oh, so that really helps the story.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It gives them more opportunities to cross paths.
And were you an athlete yourself?
Not at that level. I did not.
Not many of us were.
No, but I mean, you're a triathlete, I've learned. So
not at that level.
I love physical activity. I love feeling strong. I'm definitely unlearning bad habits from my childhood of wanting to be smaller and thin. And I think it's really inspiring to see women who just lean into their strength, physical strength, mental strength, all kinds of strength. And so it was awesome to be able to just imagine what it would be like to be right alongside these women running and jumping and going to sapper school and learning how to fight hand-to-hand combat and just things that I have not done. But I think I could, you know, if I was in the right environment, I do think that I would be pushed to be more physically fit. I mean, I work out all the time. I enjoy that side of myself. And so it was really easy for me to get into that state of mind.
Well, I loved seeing it because I feel like, and maybe this is me just being my niche brain, but I feel like there's really not a lot of fiction out there featuring female athlete protagonists.
Well, it's funny because one of the questions, you know, we talked about later in book recommendations, you know, you asked what are some of my favorite books of female athletes, and I had to really think, which made me wonder, like, do I not have enough reading under my belt? Or is it really, like you said, that there's just not that many depictions of female athletes? I think you're actually right. And that makes me feel better about the fact that I had a hard time coming up with an answer.
And what Claire's referring to, y'all, is going to be in the Superlatives Patreon episode. So that'll be available for patrons at a later date. So I know you have a second novel in the works. Can you give us any preview?
Well, you know, I would, except I just got some feedback from my agent recently that is making me question the whole dang thing. So,
okay.
I'm just going to let you simmer. And I should have probably given you some more mysterious answer other than like, this shit is hard. No, but I am working on something. You know, my husband and I had a long battle with infertility during the years that I was writing Beyond the Point. And I'm really inspired by stories that tackle tough issues like that, and especially kind of having a sneak peek behind the curtain of what marriage is really like and how to have a healthy marriage in the midst of extreme difficulty and stress. So I think it will be in that realm somewhere, but I'm still exploring and trying to figure out where I want the pen to land on the page. So to be determined.
Well, that premise and those general themes are right up my alley. So I know I am looking forward to it whenever it is available.
Thank you. Don't hold your breath.
Well, we'll keep everybody posted.
Awesome.
All right, let's get into your book recommendations.
Sure.
As usual, Claire is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she does not love, and one new release that she's excited about. Tell me about the first old book you love.
If you've read Beyond the Point, you know that I include little snippets about East of Eden in my own book, my own novel. And East of Eden by John Steinbeck really is my favorite book of all time. It is one of the main reasons that my husband and I are married, because it's one of the few books he's ever read. And it really, to me, is such a perfect depiction of the human condition and what it means to be in a family and what it means to want to live a life that's honorable and good while also battling your own inner demons. So it's great. I mean, I cannot recommend it enough.
This is for my listeners. They know that I have trouble with the classics and I have not read many of them as an adult. This is one of the very few that I have read as an adult.
Do you like it? Is it a favorite?
I liked parts of it. I thought it was too long. I loved the family story about the Trask family. I thought that the Cain and Abel tie-ins were kind of unnecessary. I just would have preferred sort of the family drama, I think.
Like a straight drama. Yeah.
Yes.
I loved all the Cain and Abel stuff. And I think Kathy Trask, who is the villain in the book, is one of the most terrifying characters in all of literature.
I was just about to say she is a hell of a villain.
Yep. And I think it's really interesting to read. It's chapter 8 in the book. Even just reading her introductory chapter to me was like taking a class in grad school on literature. If you could just read that one chapter over and over again, how John Steinbeck introduces how terrifying she is, it's pretty interesting.
And she's just an interesting character all around. You're not going to like her, but totally. You know, she's an interesting read, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So that was East of Eden by John Steinbeck, published in the 1950s. And tell me about the second old book you love.
Sure. So this is new to me, but it was written in 1925, I believe. It won the Pulitzer Prize, and it's by Edna Ferber. It's called So Big. And this book I came to know about because a woman in my book club recommended that we read it. And I was sort of hesitant about it because I've been so interested in reading modern fiction. But I can't tell you how refreshing it was to read something old. And just the way that she wrote, the way sentences are constructed, the turns of phrase. I mean, sometimes I would just laugh out loud because of the just witty way that Edna Ferber wrote about this topic. And what the book is about is a very strong woman in the 1920s who inherits a farm from her deceased husband and has to kind of make her own way. And it's just before the Great Depression. And the relationship at the center of that novel is between a mother and her son. And it's just a beautiful picture of what it means to live a big life. And everyone has a different answer to what that means.
That was So Big by Edna Ferber and a Pulitzer Prize winner. So y'all, if you're doing reading challenges and have a Pulitzer Prize winner category, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And me personally, I have trouble with Pulitzers. From a contemporary perspective?
Yes.
Yes. Agree. It's almost like a big run fast sign for me.
Totally. Me too. And the only other one that I've read that I liked that was a Pulitzer winner was Middlesex. But other than that, I've really struggled too. So I hear you on that.
Yeah. All right. Can you tell me about the first new book you love?
Sure. So the first new book that I love is a book called A Woman Is No Man by Etaf Rum. And I learned about this book through the Book of the Month program. Etaf is a young Palestinian American. She lives in North Carolina. And she wrote this book somewhat based on her own life experience of growing up in an Arab family in the States and the process of kind of liberating herself from the oppressive nature that that culture can sometimes take on. And it's her debut novel, and so I was so captivated by her voice and just the subject matter that, again, I had not seen anywhere. I loved it. I couldn't put it down.
I read this one, too. I also loved it. It's a tough read, but
It's hard. It's really hard.
It's really hard. There's some really tough scenes. There's just women being sort of demoralized and brutalized. But I do think she ends it on a hopeful note, which I appreciated, with a little bit of a badass lady kick to it.
Totally. Yep. And I think there's some books out there that are demoralizing to women and you kind of finish reading and you're like, well, what was the point of that?
Right.
But this, I felt like, yes, it was hard to read, but also I felt like there was so much purpose to it, to uncovering what still goes on right in our backyards. And so I felt like it was very important.
So that was A Woman Is No Man by Etaf Rum, and that came out in March. And I think you can still get it as an add-on at Book of the Month, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
All right. Tell me about the second new book you love.
Yep. So the second new book I love is by a writer named Erin Lee Carr, and she also happens to be a documentary filmmaker. Erin is an incredibly whip smart young woman, and she lives in New York City. And she wrote this memoir, All That You Leave Behind, which is about the loss of her late father, David Carr, who was a very influential New York Times media writer. And her father died at a very young age and had also written his own very successful memoir, which is called The Night of the Gun. So Erin writes about her relationship to her father, grappling with his death and his legacy, and then also about coming to terms with her own addictions. Her father dealt with addiction and was in recovery for much of his life. And so Erin in this book also walks through her process of recovery and in a very open and powerful way shows that there's hope for people who have struggled with addiction. She also includes a lot of emails in this book. And there were some that I just wanted to stop and go, wait a second, I need to write that down because that's such a great way to get someone to answer your email. Her dad teaches her how to send a good email and how to get a job and all these things that I'm like, man, I didn't have a mentor like that. And so it's a great book all around.
And that also was a book of the month pick a couple months ago.
I know. I feel bad that some of my choices are also book of the month picks, but they're so good. They're doing such a good job.
No, I agreed. I've realized my best books of 2019 so far list that I published kind of midway through the year, a lot of them were book of the month picks. And that would just happen to be that way. I mean, I am a member of book of the month and actually was a judge in October.
How cool.
Yeah. So that was exciting, but that happens to me too. But the other thing I would add is that I haven't read this book. It is on my audio TBR list. And when I was researching it for this episode, it said that when her father died, she kind of went back through all their correspondence as a sort of grieving process. But in the process of doing that, she realized that he was teaching her so much. And that was the inspiration for the memoir.
It's true. It's incredible to read through. And it's made me want to send my dad more emails. Truly.
Yeah. And for listeners who aren't familiar with David Carr, he was the New York Times journalist that collapsed in the newsroom back in 2015. And that it was pretty well documented in the news when this happened. So if that jogs your memory at all. That was All That You Leave Behind by Erin Lee Carr. And tell me about the book you did not love.
So the book that I did not love was Evie Drake Starts Over. It came out earlier this year and I think I saw it in the bookstore and the cover just looked so fun and interesting. And I know that you just read it and I'm curious to hear your thoughts about it. So I hate to just dive into my negativity. It's so hard as an author to like critique someone else's work because I know how hard it is.
Yep. You're coming from a different place than I am.
Totally. I think what's hard for me about that book is that it is about a woman who has just recently lost her husband. So she's a widow. Early in the book, you kind of learn that she was about to leave him and she wasn't all that sad that he died, to be honest. And that's a difficult thing for her to bear as everyone else is grieving her husband. And I, from that point forward, really struggled because I have had several friends lose their husbands in the last couple years. And I just felt unconnected to this character who had no grief for her lost spouse. And the author sort of reveals later on maybe why she felt that way and why she was planning to leave. But by that point, I was sort of like, eh, it didn't do it for me.
That's understandable. I can totally see that.
Yep. And I felt like it was a little convenient that a cute guy moves in next door. I just, the whole it didn't do it for me.
Yeah. What she's referring to is a washed up baseball player moves into her spare room in her house. And this is a rom-com book. So I totally agree that that was convenient. I also in my head, though, was like, it's a rom-com. That's, I guess, to be expected, right?
Big excuses. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
I actually loved the theme of how do you grieve someone that you were supposedly supposed to be devastated that they passed away, but there were some things going on behind the scenes that you don't truly feel that way?
I think I could have gotten on board with it. I felt like it was ripe territory. I wasn't sure that the author truly pulled it off in a way that made me feel compassion for the main character.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but that was just me.
Fair enough.
But I agree with you that it's an interesting angle that hasn't really been explored too much.
Actually, there's another book that explores it that's coming out in October. All This Could Be Yours by Jamie Attenberg.
Oh, I've seen that floating around.
And I read them back to back, funnily enough.
Oh, how interesting. Did you like one more than the other?
I mean, All This Could Be Yours is much more literary and much darker. It is not a rom-com. It's a family drama and it's extremely dark. And I rated that higher, but Evie Drake, I needed a recovery book from The Only Plane in the Sky, which was
absolutely
incredible and also just
devastating.
Totally difficult to read. Mm-hmm. And I just needed something fluffy and whatever. So that's Evie Drake was the right book at the right time for me.
I need another fluffy book right now. I just finished a really sad book. So I'm...
Oh, I'll send you a list.
Oh, that'd be...
I keep a list of what I call brain candy books.
Oh, I need that right now. Seriously.
All right. So that was Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes. And that came out in June. And that's another sort of sports book.
It is a little bit, but the woman in the book is not an athlete. And she makes that clear.
No, so. The man is the athlete and he's washed up and he's mentally like trying to handle the fact that he cannot play his sport anymore.
Yep.
All right. So tell me about the new release that you're excited about.
So I just recently got wind that the author Sue Monk Kidd, who wrote The Invention of Wings and The Secret Life of Bees, is coming out with a new novel in 2020. And the book will be called The Book of Longings. And from what I can gather, it's a fiction book based on true mythology and evidence that it's possible Jesus had a wife. So the book is going to be about this character, and her name is Anna, and about what happened to her and how she was silenced and whether or not she is the most silenced character in all of history. You know, I'm someone who believes in Jesus, and so I always find different takes on his life to be interesting. And I like to keep my brain open to, you know, what other folks are saying. And Sue Monk Kidd is such a wonderful author that I'm sure she'll treat this with such grace and delicacy. And so I can't wait to get my hands on it.
And y'all, I tried to look up this book before the episode. It's not anywhere. So this is a super sneak peek.
I know. I'm hoping it's okay that I'm even talking about it.
Well, no, it's on there. I did see it. The only place I saw it was the author's bio on her author website. And then I saw it in Sue Monk Kidd's bio on Goodreads, but the book itself is not listed on Goodreads, nor is it listed in Edelweiss. So I don't believe it has a set publication date yet within 2020, as far as I can tell, but I could be wrong on that.
I've been told that it's supposed to come out in 2020, but as you know, sometimes those things can get pushed around. So
oh, absolutely.
I doubt it's in writing anywhere.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, I was not able to find it in writing. All right, so that was The Book of Longings by Sue Monk Kidd, coming out sometime in 2020, we think.
That's right.
Are we ready to play Rate It?
Do it.
I like to end every episode with Rate It, which is a lightning round game where I throw out five bookish things, and they could be anything book related, and sometimes I stretch that definition, and you rate it either 1 or 5 stars, just like you would rate a book, but you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars.
Okay, so only 1 or 5.
Yes, this is love hate.
Got it.
All right, number one, choosing not to attend West Point yourself.
1 star.
Ah, I read somewhere that you sort of wrestled with that later in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote a whole book to like get over my regret, Sarah.
Yes, and it was a beautiful book.
Good.
So maybe you got to live it a little bit in your brain as you were writing
it. I did. Yeah, there was a lot of healing that came through that process.
Yeah. Number two, reading alongside your spouse.
Oh, it's never happened. 5 stars, but it's never happened. It's my dream.
I caught somewhere, I think it was on your social media somewhere, that your husband had lied to you when you first started dating that he liked reading.
Yeah, no, that's true. False advertising, Patrick Gibson. Yep.
That's amazing, number one. And number two, I hear you because my husband is absolutely not a reader.
Oh, man. And Patrick does like to read, but he likes very different books than I do. And he reads maybe 5 books a year, you know, when we're on vacation and maybe one, you know, another time. But yesterday we were flying home from New York and I was reading a book that I was really into. And I kept turning to him and saying, I really love this book. Like, you have to read this book. And he finally looked at me and he was like, stop talking to me.
I'm not going to read the book. Let's just leave it be.
Yep. I would love it, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I'm with you. Fair enough. Number three, toxic female friendship novels, which I think there are a lot of, and your book was not of the toxic variety.
Yeah, no, 1 star. 1 star for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, those can get pretty demented sometimes. And I do love to read demented things every now and then, as my listeners know. But yours was refreshing. Yours was a positive female friendship story.
Yep. I hoped that because I need those in my life.
Don't we all? Mm-hmm. All right. Number four, Pat Conroy.
Oh, 5 stars.
He's the other author that I feel like writes about military schools or wrote about military schools.
Are you kidding me? He is so brilliant in so many ways.
And I love him too. He is my number one all-time favorite author.
Oh, Sarah, I knew I liked you. Oh, so good.
Number five, the process of finding an agent for your first novel. And not your agent herself, but the process you went through to find her.
5 stars.
Oh, tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, the process itself was really helpful for me. It took about a year between when I started querying agents and when I actually signed on the dotted line with my agent. And that process was really long, but there were a few agents that really wanted to help me and gave me feedback on the manuscript and helped me make it even better. And I wasn't sure if they were going to be the agent that ended up taking me on and, you know, helping sell the book to HarperCollins. But the agent that I went with, her name's Allison, she just really stuck with me through all of those revisions. And neither of us had any promise of making money off of those revisions, but she stuck with me. And after that long year of revising the novel, she finally said, yep, I think this is ready. Let's sign some paperwork. I want you to be my client. And we did it. And so even though it was a long process, I definitely would give it 5 stars because I was so lucky to have agents interested from the get-go. And that's not always the case. And so I was really, really grateful that I had people that were in my corner.
And it sounds like she really invested a lot of upfront time and energy.
Totally.
And by the time you sign on the dotted line, you're probably pretty comfortable with her.
100%. Yep. And she was always great about checking in with me. She hadn't heard from me for a few months. She would write and be like, hey, what's going on? Where are you? You know, and that's really great when you're just kind of alone and working.
Right. Absolutely. Because it is a lonely thing.
Definitely.
So I did read somewhere, and this is why I put this question in here, that one of the agents you submitted to wanted to get rid of the West Point years altogether.
Yes, that's true. I wonder where you read that.
I can't even remember. I can't remember whether it was an article or an interview or on your Instagram somewhere. I mean,
That's true. I had two agents that were kind of vying for the manuscript. And as I was revising, it kind of came into a fork in the road. And Allison, my agent now, you know, was very committed to having the early years portion of the book stay. And the other agent said, I just don't know about the West Point elements of it. They feel disjointed. And I needed to work on those parts for sure. And I did, but I wasn't ready to say goodbye to those years.
I'm so glad you didn't.
Oh, well, thanks. I feel like
it's what made this friendship novel so unique and made it stand out from all the other friendship novels out there. One of the things.
It's also probably what made it 500 pages, which has been frustrating for people.
I'm a person that's very sensitive to long books. This didn't feel like 500 pages.
Well, I hope not.
If I feel the length, then I get frustrated. But if I'm flying through it and I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe this was 500 pages, then it's not a problem for me at all. Well, I loved those years. And I think it made Danny and Avery and Hannah really shaped who they were and was very necessary to the story.
Well, thank you. I think so, too. And I'm grateful that they stayed in. And for the sake of my experience growing up at West Point and for the women I interviewed, I think it was really important that those years stayed in.
Absolutely. Well, Claire, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Sarah. This has been so great. And I really appreciate you taking the time and reading the book and sharing it with your listeners. It means so much to me.
And I appreciate you taking your time. And for everyone, the listeners, I'm just going to tell you this. We had to record on 2 different days because I had a massive computer meltdown and Claire was kind enough to get back on with me and finish the episode. So I thank you so much for that. Before we go, tell everyone where they can find you online.
Yes, you can find me at Claire C. Gibson on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you can find my website, clairegibson.com.
And y'all, if you have not read Beyond the Point yet, it's fabulous. Pick it up. It's going to be on my holiday gift guide. And it's also one of those books that, for lack of a better term, Rebecca Shinsky and Jeff O'Neill from Book Riot call these Swiss Army knife recommendations. And it's a book that you can really give to a lot of different readers that you don't know much about their reading taste. It has very broad appeal, I feel like.
I'll take that. That's amazing.
And I'm still trying perfect to come up with my own name for those, but I can't think of anything that's better than Swiss Army Knife recommendation.
And it works for the genre.
Totally. All right, y'all. The first Superlatives episode for Sarah's Bookshelves Live patrons will be going live very soon, and it will include Claire's picks for categories like Best Campus Novel and Best Fictional Friendship Group, as well as the superlative picks from Christina Areola and Sarah Hildreth from Fiction Matters, both of whom you have already heard from this month. If you'd like to get this bonus episode and a new superlatives episode every month, along with other special episodes, you can support the show for $5 a month on Patreon. There's a link in my show notes and in my Instagram bio. Next week will be a mini episode with Elizabeth Chapman of the Sam and Scout blog. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.